Hello and welcome to this edition of the Manager's Essentials podcast. Today I'm with Sarah from our legal office and we're talking about the law relating to disabled staff and job applicants, and in particular our requirements around making reasonable adjustments to support them. So hello Sarah.
Hello Jenna.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me today. So our listeners to the podcast might have heard the term reasonable adjustments. Can you explain what it means?
I can indeed. The requirement to make reasonable adjustments comes under the provisions of the Equality Act 2010. And the Equality Act is essentially, it protects people from discrimination in the workplace or the wider public. And it protects 9 protected characteristics. So these are things like sex, age, gender, things of that nature. But disability is one of the 9 protected characteristics. And the requirement to make reasonable adjustments under the Act is unique to the protected characteristic of disability. In the case of disability, there is a requirement for an employer to treat people with disabilities more favourably. So effectively, it's positive discrimination, which is generally, in respect of all the other protected characteristics, not permitted.
That's really interesting. You've almost touched a little bit on my next question already, but what's the purpose of making a reasonable adjustment? Why are employers required to do that?
Okay, well, in a nutshell, the purpose of making a reasonable adjustment is to remove any substantial disadvantage that a disabled person may face because of their disability in the workplace. Now, you touched upon it earlier in your introduction. It applies not only to employees, but it also applies to job applicants. And in fact, a lot of the case law does concern discrimination against people who have applied for jobs who happen to have disabilities. Now, interestingly, an employer is not obliged to make reasonable adjustments unless it knows or ought reasonably to know that a disabled person in fact has a disability and that they are placed at a substantial disadvantage because of that disability. So if an employer doesn't know that an individual has a disability, the reasonable adjustment duty is not triggered. Having said that, an employer can't just bury their head in the sand. So where it is apparent that there may be a disability, the Equality and Human Rights Commission Code of Practice states that employers must do all they reasonably can be expected to do to find out the relevant information. Just by the way, when I refer to that Equality and Human Rights Commission Code of Practice, it's a very comprehensive and a very useful guide to the Equality Act, and it's really quite practical as well. So if there are any issues, questions around, what's reasonable, what adjustments should we be considering, it's definitely a reference guide. And certainly tribunals have to take it into account when they are determining whether an adjustment is reasonable or not.
And I think that could definitely be a challenge sometimes for our managers to know what's reasonable. And it's a difficult word to define as well. What does reasonable mean?
And I wish you could help me on that one. It's clearly a very important concept, but your reasonable could be quite different from my reasonable. And actually, if you think about it, the duty is not triggered unless the adjustment is reasonable. So if somebody is proposing steps that are not reasonable, the duty doesn't arise. Now, the Court of Appeal has held that the concept of reasonable adjustments is an objective one that will be determined by the tribunal. And again, this is quite different from other types of employment law, because what it means is that a tribunal can determine, it can step into the shoes of the employer, and it can determine whether or not an employer should have invested time and resource on putting certain reasonable adjustments in place. And to give you an example of how that differs from other types of employment provisions, in the case of an unfair dismissal claim, for example, if an employer dismisses an employee and the tribunal has to determine whether that was fair or unfair, it's quite possible that the tribunal will think, well, actually, we wouldn't have dismissed in these circumstances. However, the test is whether that decision fell within a band of reasonable responses. So even though the tribunal may disagree with the view of the employer, so long as the employer's decision falls within this band of reasonable responses, the tribunal must not interfere with the decision. It cannot step into the shoes of the employer. This is where, in the case of reasonable adjustments, it's quite different. The tribunal will step into the shoes of the employer. There is no band of reasonable responses. The adjustment is either reasonable or it isn't, and the tribunal ultimately decides on that. So I'm not helping you here, am I? I'm not giving you any help as to determining what's reasonable or not. Well, I'll come back again to the EHRC Code of Practice, because it sets out a number of factors that should be taken into account when determining whether an adjustment is reasonable. And these are the extent to which the adjustment would reduce the disadvantage at all or remove the disadvantage, the extent to which the adjustment is practicable, the financial and other cost of the adjustment, the extent to which the adjustment would disrupt the employer's other activities, the financial and resources available to the employer, the availability of any external financial or other type of support, and finally, the nature of the employer's activities and the size of the undertaking. So that's quite relevant to the university, because the university is a public sector and a large public sector employer at that. So more will be expected of the university. But just going back to that list, I think the most important one on the list is the extent to which the adjustment would remove or reduce the disadvantage. Because no matter how big the organisation, no matter how much resource it has available to it, if the actual proposed step is not going to have any effect whatsoever in reducing or removing the disadvantage, then there is no requirement to make that step. So it doesn't matter how cheap it would be. As I say, it doesn't matter how big the organisation. The key is whether or not the adjustment would reduce or remove the disadvantage. On that point, though, if there is a potential for the adjustment to remove or reduce the disadvantage, then it will be considered reasonable. It might not be a guarantee, but if there is a potential that it will, then the tribunal will regard it as reasonable, subject obviously to things like cost and impact upon, you know, the workplace and other activities, etc. But that doesn't have to be a guarantee that it's going to work in order for the employer to be required to take steps.
So this is clearly a complex area of law. And what it sounds like is that when potential adjustments come up, it's not always easy to identify, will they be reasonable? Will they take away any potential disadvantage? So I'm hoping we're not scaring our listeners too much with this employment law. Could you give me any examples of perhaps practical things that have been considered to be reasonable adjustment or are quite likely to be?
Yeah, absolutely. And just on that point, Gemma, when you say, you know, it's a really difficult area, a lot of employers or managers almost expect the employee to come forward with the reasonable adjustments that they wish the employer to consider. And that's not a requirement. The duty to make reasonable adjustments falls fairly and squarely on the shoulders of the employer. So it doesn't matter if the employee has no ideas, quite frankly. The manager must think about, well, what is possible? You know, sometimes it requires a little bit of thinking outside of the box almost. One of the things I would go back again to the EHRC code, because again, it gives a list of examples of reasonable adjustments. And I'll read a few I won't go into it I won't go through the full list, but it's really, really practical stuff, this. I mean, there's the obvious one. So adjustments to premises, for example, widening a doorway, providing a ramp, or moving furniture for wheelchair access. Mm-hmm. That's an obvious one. Providing information in accessible format. So this could include manuals in Braille or on audio tape. So allocating some of a disabled person's duties to another worker. So for example, if a disabled person's job requires doing certain things which are difficult because of the disability, then query whether or not it's possible to allocate those specific duties to somebody else without changing fundamentally the role, however. Transferring a disabled worker to fill a different vacancy. So if they're not able to carry out their existing role, consider whether or not there are existing vacancies, which they can do. Altering a disabled worker's hours of working, you know, whether that be on a part-time basis, introducing flexibility, altering the start time and the leave time. Potentially assigning a disabled person to a different place of work. So if, for example, there are accessibility issues with one building, consider whether or not they would be better working in a different building, which is more accessible. Allowing a disabled worker to be absent during working hours for rehabilitation or assessment or treatment. So essentially giving that disabled person more time than the employer would ordinarily give to non-disabled workers. So more time off.
I think that's actually a really interesting practical list. And I think most managers would think a lot of those kind of steps, like access or maybe changing hours slightly, were quite reasonable. If we didn't make an adjustment that was reasonable, what would happen?
Well, it then potentially worst case scenario is that the individual brings a claim in the employment tribunal. So if an adjustment is perfectly reasonable to make, the employer decides not to make it, then they can bring a claim. But I think before it gets to that, then there is the impact upon morale. You know, it may increase absenteeism. Those are the sort of the more human resourcey elements, if you like, rather than the legal. The legal is fundamentally a person can bring a claim.
And I could see a scenario perhaps where a manager might be concerned whether an adjustment would work. Perhaps if I come back to one of your examples about reallocating some duties or moving a member of staff to another department. If they're concerned about that, what should they do?
I think the first port of call is to speak to the HR partner. They should definitely involve HR because HR are very familiar with these concepts, the reasonable adjustments. The university is extremely good at making reasonable adjustments, trying to accommodate people with or without disabilities, for that matter. But the manager shouldn't think that they're on their own here. There's a lot of expert resource within the university that they can access. And if they're worried about whether or not it's going to make a difference, whether they should be implementing the adjustment or not, you know, going back to you know, what is reasonable, the first question really is whether or not the adjustment is going to alleviate or remove the disadvantage. If it isn't, then it's not a reasonable adjustment. But as I say, if there's a potential that it could, then arguably, well, it is reasonable. And the question then is, well, do we know? It may be worth considering a trial period. So let's see how this works. You know, let's give this 3 or 6 months, see if it works. And again, that's something that certainly HR have done, have assisted managers with in the past.
And where can managers, I mean, you've touched on HR, but where else can managers get support and advice on making adjustments?
I think I would say the first step is probably to speak to the HR partner, because then HR partners can access a whole range of other supports. So it may be necessary to consult with occupational health. So if an individual and the manager are talking about reasonable adjustments, it may be worthwhile seeing what occupational health feels about the proposals and how it may impact upon the individual's condition. And we also have the Disability Advisory and Support Service, DAS, which again, you know, is excellent. They have a lot of understanding and knowledge about disability. But I would say that the first port of call is to speak to the HR partner, and the HR partner will then liaise with these other services.
And just one final question, if I may. Are there any other areas of law relating to disabled staff you think our managers should be aware of?
I think disability discrimination is reasonably unique, and it's more extensive than, let's say, the other protected characteristics. So the concept of disability is different than, let's say, Joe Bloggs's view of disability. If you asked, you know, a person in the street, you know, what do you consider to be a disability, they would not come up with the definition set out in the Equality Act. And it may come as a surprise to people to learn that, for example, you know, type 2 diabetes, which I think it's a very significant proportion of our population suffer with, is capable, depending on the circumstances, of amounting to a disability under the Act. Same as the menopause. Again, it's capable of amounting to a disability because it's really not the condition per se, it's the effect of that condition. So if, let's say, a condition means that a person cannot carry out their normal day-to-day activities for a period of 12 months, or it's likely to be for a period of up to 12 months, then that constitutes a disability. So whilst one person with type 2 diabetes will be perfectly able to carry out their normal day-to-day activities with no issue, another person might not. So the focus isn't really on the condition. It's all about the effect of that condition on that particular individual. So it's very individual specific. And in addition, we have the usual concepts of direct discrimination, indirect discrimination, harassment, and victimisation. Now, they apply to all of the protected characteristics. However, in the case of disability, we've discussed the duty to make reasonable adjustments, which is unique to disability. And there is also this concept of discrimination for a reason arising out of a disability, which is one of the fastest growing discrimination claims in the tribunal at this moment in time. And it's quite a difficult claim to defend.
So I think I'll probably summarise by saying this is an area where managers should seek advice and help, whether that's through human resources or via some of those specialist services. It's really important to get this right. So thank you very much for talking to me and doing this deep dive into a really interesting subject. So thank you very much.
Thanks
for listening, everybody. We'll be back very soon with another episode of the Managers Essentials podcast.